Well, good morning to all of you. My name is Jimmy Decker. I've got the great privilege of being one of the pastors here of St. Andrew and also the pastor of this 9:30 service. It is truly a great thing getting to come and be in worship with all of you guys. It's one of my favorite parts of life. One of my other favorite parts of life, though, is that I get to spend a lot of my time with my 3-year-old son, who is a beautiful example of God's love and a beautiful example of the chaos of this world. And he's all just like packaged up with a bright, smiling face. What was funny is when we were pregnant, and by we, obviously, when my wife was pregnant and I was standing there next to her, everybody told us how expensive having a kid was. And they gave us a lot of examples, like, listen, diapers are expensive, childcare is expensive, like, schooling is expensive, all these, none of y'all told me what the actual economic hit was, and, like, I'm a little resentful. Like, none of y'all told me it's the berries. Like, none of y'all told me that it's the blueberries and the strawberries and the blackberries, because, like, that boy doesn't like cheap fruit, all right? He's like, Gala Apple, get that nonsense out of here, all right? Like, give me a mango. Give me like a good, nice, expensive one. And the problem with that is I'm also lazy, all right? And so like if I'm going to buy a mango for my son, I ain't buying like a 70-cent mango that I'm going to like chop up and core out. Like, absolutely. We're going to buy the $5 prepackaged one, right? And it was funny. Arthur and I, we were having this conversation with a guy earlier this week, and we were explaining this. And he was like, what are you talking about? Like, you get a watermelon for like a dollar, and you just, and we were like, no. Listen, when you got a toddler who's yelling at you, you go for the $17 prepackaged thing of watermelon, and you just get over it, right? And why am I talking about all this? I'm talking about all this because we're talking about the fruit of the Spirit. Now, that's not a great segue from fruit into fruit of the Spirit, but like, they're not all winners. It's fine. As we talk about fruit of the Spirit, though, we talk about actually what it means to have that thing that is nourishing, that thing that is actually good. And today, we're talking about the first fruit, which is love. But really what we're going to do today is we're going to talk as much about the concept of what the fruit of the Spirit are as much as we're going to talk about love. We're going to see how those two are so inextricably linked from each other. But the hope is that over the course of the series, we're going to recognize how deeply this world needs these fruit. Because we've been talking about doing this series for almost 2 years now. We've been dreaming about what this series was going to look like for almost 2 years because we know that at any given moment, the world desperately, desperately needs this fruit. We need it for our lives. We need to experience it in our lives. And the world needs it for goodness and healing. So to kick us off in that, we're going to actually look at the context of why we understand the fruit of this Spirit to be what they are. And the passage that this comes from, it comes from the book of Galatians, specifically in the 5th chapter. But before we look at that, we're going to look at what Paul talks about before when he's talking to the Galatians about what these things that they need are and specifically what they operate in contrast to. Because in Galatians 5, before he names what the fruit of the Spirit is, up in 5:13, he says this, "You, my brothers and sisters, you were called to be free. But do not use your freedom to indulge the flesh. Rather, serve one another humbly in love. For the entire law is fulfilled in keeping this one command, love your neighbor as yourself. If you bite and devour each other, watch out, or you will be destroyed by each other. So I say, walk by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the flesh. For the flesh desires what is contrary to the Spirit, and the Spirit what is contrary to the flesh. They are in conflict with each other so that you are not under the law." I think I messed that up a little bit. It's fine. But if you are led by the Spirit, you're not under the law. The acts of the flesh are obvious. Sexual immorality, impurity and debauchery, idolatry and witchcraft, hatred, discord, jealousy, fits of rage, selfish ambition, dissensions, factions, envy, drunkenness, orgies and the like. I warn you as I did before that those who live like this will not inherit the kingdom of God. So before he names what the fruit of the Spirit is, he actually names the fundamental need that society has, which is this idea that we can't live by our own desires. because our own desires end up actually taking us in a negative direction. And the funniest part about that is what was going on with the Galatians at this moment is that they really wanted to basically like have their cake and eat it too. Like they wanted to be like, hey, we're following Jesus, but also we want to do whatever we want to do. And so they were looking for any sort of like get quick rich scheme, any sort of like shortcut, go directly to heaven card that they could pull, to the extent where at one point they were like, well, is there like something we can do that's just like automatic entry into heaven? Now, mind you, these are like Gentiles. They didn't grow up Jewish, but they were like, all right, so what are the Jewish people doing? All right, well, like the Jewish people, they were circumcised at birth. Maybe if we get circumcised, that automatically gets us into heaven. And the idea that a group of guys was like, hey, option A, we can live faithfully, or option B, we could do that. And the fact that it's like a debate, bonkers. And so he's actually trying to argue like, hey, listen, it's not about like, there's no shortcut here. There's no shortcut. If you want to live faithfully for God, you have to live faithfully. All right? And the desires that you know in your heart aren't actually good, but you have them, that's what you gotta fight up against. Because the lie that we love to tell ourselves is that, listen, if we like it, if it's fun, if we enjoy it, it must be good for us. And that's how we get ourselves into trouble. Because we have the worst impulses. Humanity is gifted with the worst impulses that anybody could possibly imagine. And I know this because that cute, chaotic, wonderful little example of grace that is my son, earlier this week, asked if he could have a peanut butter and jelly hot dog. Now, I tried to explain to him that a peanut butter and jelly hot dog does not exist. He was having none of that. So he looks at me and goes, that's what I want for dinner. And so what do you do when you're a dad in that moment? Do you like continue to fight with the argument of like, that's not a thing that exists in this world? Or do you go to the pantry? And so dang sure did. Like went to the pantry. I got out a jar of peanut butter. We started slathering that hot dog bun up. We put a hot dog in the middle. That boy was beyond. That was like the happiest I've ever seen that kid. We've given him a lot of things in life, but with the peanut butter and jelly hot dog. And I laugh at him for that impulse of what he thinks is going to be good for him. But like, he's going to grow up into something worse than that. Like, he's going to grow up and he's going to realize that's not a thing that you can go to a restaurant and he's going to order. He's going to realize that. But eventually, he's going to have different impulses. Like, he's going to get older and he's going to like get mad at somebody on a playground and he's going to want to push that kid. He's going to get older. He's going to get up into high school and college, and he's going to not study for a test, and he's going to want to cheat on that test. He's going to get older. He's going to get into the professional world, and he's going to want to cheat over a client or a coworker to further his own career and his own bank account. Because our impulses are just not good. And the reality is the way we overcome that impulse is we train ourselves. We train ourselves to realize that even though there is something we might want in our heart, we know it is not good for us and we choose this option instead. That's part of what it means to raise a child, but it's also part of what it means to be raised up in faith, is to actually say, just because there is something we want, if we know it is not good, let's teach ourselves to no longer want it, or when we want it, how to overcome it. And this is the lesson that Paul is giving to the Galatians. And he tells them that they will know that they're being successful when they begin to see this fruit. And specifically, you keep going in 5:22, and it says, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such things there is no law. Those who belong to Christ Jesus have crucified the flesh with its passions and its desires. Since we live by the Spirit, let us keep in step with the Spirit. Let us not become conceited, provoking, and envying each other. You will know Christians by their fruit. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. A little pneumatic device with that. You count the syllables. There's 3 one-syllable words, then there's 3 two-syllable words, then there's 3 three-syllable words. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. And the reality is that when we look at that, there does seem to be this like chicken and the egg kind of scenario of like, listen, do we have to invest in those nine fruit in order to be faithful? Or if we are being faithful, will we then see those nine fruit? And the answer to that is yes. That if we begin to live out those nine things, we will begin to live faithfully. And as we are living faithfully, we will actually begin to see those things taking place, even if we're not intentionally doing them. Because what fruit is fruit is something that is there, that is meant to nourish you, and is meant to nourish the world. It's in contrast with the other things we eat. Because let's be honest, fruit are more enjoyable than vegetables. But here's the crazy thing. There is no such thing as a vegetable. And I'm serious. There is absolutely no scientific thing as a vegetable. Every single vegetable that you can imagine, I promise you, it is something else. All right? And I'm imagining you guys being like, no, Jimmy, look, what about a carrot? Nope, carrot's a root. What about a potato? That's a tuber. What about spinach? What about lettuce? That's leaves, all right? You're literally just like taking leaves off of a branch and you're eating it, all right? Like celery is just like the stalk. You're basically eating a tree trunk when you're eating celery. Like there is no scientific definition of a vegetable. Vegetables do not exist. Everything we think is a vegetable is another part of the plant. And that's really critical because so many vegetables that we think are vegetables are in fact actually fruit. Jalapenos are fruit. Squash is a fruit. Zucchini is a fruit. Tomatoes are a fruit. Do you know that there is, in fact, a scientific definition for a fruit? It is the vessel in which a seed is transported. Anything that has a seed inside of it from which you can plant a new tree, a new plant, a new bush, whatever, that is a fruit. And that is why when we talk about fruit, when we talk about trees, when we talk about all this, understanding what their purpose is. We had a COO here at St. Andrew for many, many years, and he loved to ask this question: what is the purpose of an apple tree? And the natural thing you want to say is to make apples. And he goes, no, purpose of an apple tree is to make more apple trees. Because the apples, the thing that we pay attention to most, what's their purpose? Their purpose is to spread that seed so that more can be grown from it. When we talk about fruit of the Spirit, we have to understand that, in fact, these are the things by which the gospel, the goodness of Jesus, the grace of Christ is transmitted to the world. As evidenced by the fact that Jesus Christ, the guy who started this whole thing, he began all that work by demonstrating to the world love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Because of the fruit of the Spirit transmits that very plant, that very tree, that very vine from which we find life. Now, this is something that's complicated for us because, like, listen, you didn't all go to A&M like I did, all right? A stands for agriculture, all right? We understand this innately, all right? But we don't understand what it means to, like, cultivate. We don't understand what it means to, like, make something that is designed to go out and to spread into the rest of the world. But if we can embody that, if we can embrace that, it actually allows us to become something greater. So think of this in terms of a vineyard where you will go grow grapes, either to eat or to make something else that is awesome from said grapes, all right? So if you are wanting to design a vineyard, if you're wanting to grow a vineyard, the obvious thing is you go, okay, so you go get some grape seeds, you plant those grape seeds, they grow, you get grapes, and then you can make, whatever you want to make from those grapes. And the reality is that is kind of true, but also, like, not true at all. So if you want to make a vineyard, here's what you got to do. You've got to, in year one, plant some grape seeds, yes. And your only goal in year one is to try to keep that plant alive as much as possible. All right, because it is new, it is fragile, it is very weak, it doesn't have deep roots yet. So there's all these different reasons and ways in which it is going to wither away and fall away. And so your only goal in that first year is to try to keep it alive. Now, is it going to grow grapes? Absolutely will. Will those grapes be good? Debatable, but mostly no. They're just not going to be. They're not going to be as big as they could be. They're not going to be as flavorful as they can be, but they are going to produce some kind of fruit. But that's going to take you into year two. In year two, that vine that the grapes come from actually has the ability to now grow with some like legitimate height. All right, and so what you need to be able to do is take that height and actually capitalize upon it. So as it's growing bigger, as it's growing stronger, as the roots are growing deeper, you need to give it the ability to actually go out and to flourish in a new way. So you need to get like a trellis or an arbor and allow that vine to start moving up that trellis or arbor. All right, that's your only goal in year two. Same thing, is it going to produce some grapes? Yeah. Are they going to be better than the year before? Yes, still not good, but it does still produce some fruit. That's going to take you into year three. In year three, here's what you have to actually start doing. You have to do what is specifically named by vineyards and by specialists there as training the plant to perfection. And what that means is you have to actually get the vines and you have to get them to go across the trellis, across the arbor, and you have to prune off everything that is either not moving in the correct direction or that is not going to produce good fruit. Because the way that a vine works is that the vine is designed to get nutrients and to spread it to the branches so that they can produce fruit, all right? And if you can't produce fruit, all you're doing with that branch is you're just pumping in nutrients that are being stolen from the rest of it. So you have to be able to prune away things that are actually going to take away from the good fruit that you're trying to build. That's year three. Better fruit still, but still not the best possible fruit. It is not actually until year four that you get the best possible fruit. After you've gotten it to survive its weak beginning stages, after you've allowed it to grow some deeper roots and begin to reach the height of that it can possibly be, after you begin to prune away all the things that are going to take away its ability to produce fruit, only then do you get the best possible, most incredible grapes. And so when Paul is talking about fruit, when Jesus himself talks about fruit, you have to understand that while this is like a foreign concept to most of us because we can just go to a grocery store and we can buy pre-packaged and pre-sliced fruit, like back then they understood the amount of work that was associated with producing genuinely good fruit. So much so that when Jesus himself in John 15 begins to look at the people, he gives a very similar example as what Paul uses. Because in John 15:1, he says, I am the true vine and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes so that it will be even more fruitful. You are already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. Remain in me as I also remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine and you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If you do not remain in me, you are like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up, they're thrown into the fire, they're burned. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. This is my Father's glory, this is to my Father's glory that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. You see what he's talking about there? He's talking about the idea that you do have to prune off the things that don't allow you to bear fruit. He's talking about the idea that we are branches. We cannot survive without a vine because we can't produce our own nutrients. We can't produce our own photosynthesis. We can't produce our own water sources. We have to actually get it from somewhere else. We have to be attached to a vine. And then he goes on to say, he says, as the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Now remain in my love. If you keep my commands, you will remain in my love. Just as I kept my Father's commands and remain in his love. I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. My command is this, love each other as I have loved you. It is not a mistake that love is the first of the fruit. It's not a mistake that love is the first fruit because love is in fact the cross. Because none of this makes sense without love. All the patience in the world makes no sense without love. All the joy in the world makes no sense without love. All of love makes no sense if we are not willing to go and to accept it and to spread it to others. When we look at Jesus, we realize that he demonstrated the greatest possible example of what it means to prune away those things that stand in the way of us having the ability to love. God could have not come to this world. God could have not become human to be around us, but God actually sacrificed the ability to be separated from the brokenness of the world so that he could be with us. He sacrificed the ability to be separated and not experience pain in order to truly love us. That's why he got on the cross for us, so that we might experience love and we might have the experience to be nourished by it. We might have the ability to then go and to bear fruit that spreads to all the ends of the earth. And there are times where it's not going to be easy. There are going to be times where we're going to look at ourselves and we're going to think like, I just don't know that I have it in me. And the reality is, this is where it is so critical for us to understand that it is a chicken and the egg scenario. There are going to be times where our faith is amazingly abundant and we are the greatest vessel possibly of love. And there are going to be times where we don't have it. And in those moments, you know what you do? You go out and you actually do the work that needs to be done. You go out and you begin to actually cultivate that fruit. You begin to go out and actually show love. There's a story of this pastor who was struggling with his wife, and he loves telling this story. And so I heard him explain that, like, one time when he was struggling with his wife, and he goes, I think I'm ready to leave my wife. And this other guy looked at him and goes, yeah, you know what? Why don't you actually put in some work in love first? Why don't you actually go buy her a card and write her a love letter today? And he goes, I don't want to do that. And he goes, that's exactly why you're going to do it. You're going to go put in the work. And the reality is that he started doing these things that he would do if he was truly in love, and he found himself to be back in the love itself. There are times where the love will be the driving force, and there are times where it won't be. But the reality is that if you ignore all of that and just say, I want to live in love, you will get to experience it, and you will get to share it. Love is the cross. Love is the fruit from which all other fruit is born. And as we think about what this world needs from us, it needs us to be vessels of that love. And so the challenge for us this week is to do exactly like that pastor had to do. If you are feeling it, if you are feeling just overwhelmed by love, that's fantastic. If you are feeling in that, you're like, you know what, I have this distance from God, I have this distance from other, you know what? Put in the work. Go sit with God in prayer, knowing that doing that work over time produces genuine love. Know that it's not a thing where you can just go to the store and buy prepackaged grace and prepackaged love. We have to actually put in the work to experience it and to be able to then go forth and to share it unto others. And then we come back and we see how love sets the stage for us to go and embody the other eight. Will you pray with me? Gracious and loving God, you came to this earth and you embodied that love for us. You embodied this fruit. You began to demonstrate to us that you are the vine and we are the branches. And apart from you, we can do nothing of our own. And so God, give us the strength to remain attached to you. God, invest in us, strengthen us when we're weak. Allow us to grow big. Allow us to grow strong. Allow us to grow into the image you've made us to be. Prune away those things of our hearts that would distract us. And God, give us love so that we might have the ability to go forth and to give love to others. God, allow us to give love to others so that we might have the ability to experience that love from you. It's in your Son's holy and blessed name we pray. Amen.